We're recording.
I'm on the air. Okay. Look at this. We have a whole array of gadgets. Well, I don't have a lot of problems in America, but initial lockdown must be a nightmare for them there too.
Because the OU and the major
no one's mocked on it. It's up to you guys. I don't think anyone even knows what it is, by and large. Not official lockdown, not Chodesh, not Bishisrael, not Pasisrael. It all got lost. Not Chodesh. No, I really mean it. Because I write stuff, you know, I speak to yeshivish guys from the States and you get like a surprised look when you're talking to what are you talking about?
It's interesting in America, I don't know what they're doing. The Sephardi communities are becoming more of like a lot of shuls have a minion for Sephardi.
Right. So that's what I'm saying.
Yosef
started a shkita there last year. It's sort of, I don't know if it's up and running fully officially, but they started one. And they're definitely making strides towards adhering to the minhagim chachila. Or stringent, Bishri Yisrael, there's no comparison between the testing.
Hello.
There you go. I will get up.
Okay, we're starting, yes.
Okay.
Starting?
Might as well, I'm here. Okay.
Ready?
Yeah,
I'm
ready.
Ready?
I want to just say one thing. I had an email or two, so I stopped on the way up. People asked me to check. There's a new store down in the center called Fruit and More. It's a legitimate hashkacha there from Amaflati on the fruits and vegetables. As his $2 says in the bottom, there's a long paragraph about basically he covers you for tumor mice and oil and anything that needs to be checked or cleaned, etc. You have to go on your own, he's not responsible. I don't get the appearance that the $2 covers anything to do with the dry fruit. So you have to ask the rabbi what he gets, what he does, decide if you want to trust him or not. Hashkacha seems to be perennial fruits and vegetables. I wrote it down, believe never. If I can find out tomorrow from Avraham Frati, I'll find out and I'll pass the information to the shul. If they want to put it out on the shul list, they can or not. But that's what I can do. But hashkacha is a hashkacha for fruits and vegetables, like a supermarket. Yeah.
Can I ask an I was in the basement this week. They're making ready-made chickens without putting anything on it. Any hechsher or labeling, anything.
Is there a hashkacha on the meat department?
So they say there is. And I said to them, you know, it makes sense to put a label on which head chicken or that it's got the hechsher. When you go to somebody's house, they've got it on the shayish. You don't know what. Am I right or am I going to?
Look, again, it always comes down to the consumer. If people shop and don't care and buy everything, why is anyone going to take any trouble to try to identify a label or something? If people came into the store in politeness and said, you know, we can't buy this because we don't know what it is, I think the store would make an effort. I do believe it falls in our lap and we can implement change if it's important enough to demand, ask, request, whatever word you want to use. Not everything has to be, you know, fighting and screaming. It can be done nicely, but I think. Look, I spend a lot of hours in the shuk in Machane Yehuda, and then like I took this class every Sunday night. We walked around a few weeks ago, showing the people just how to shop and what the signs mean. And we were amazed. We went to one area and we counted about a dozen stores. All the chukot were expired, without exception. Every one without exception was expired. I said, let's stand here and watch and see how many people look, how many people don't shop, and then we'll answer. You know what I'm saying? It's sort of like a moot issue. We're our own worst enemy. That's really what it comes down to. Yes. All right, tonight is Bishri Yisrael, Bishri Lachem, positive or the negative, however you look at it. This is definitely one of the areas in Kashrus where there's tremendous differences between Sephardim and Ashkenazim. In this case, the Ashkenazim have a much easier life. The Sephardim, it's much more difficult. This is, as we were saying before, this seems to be one of the Zeros, halachas that appear in Shulchan Aruch. It's not something made up, it's in Shulchan Aruch in Yodea, but it seems to be lost out of Eretz Yisrael. I don't know why, it just, Minhag HaMakom seems to just wipe all these things out. Tomim Gozru two gazelles. One was Bishul Yisrael and one was Pas Yisrael. Bishul Yisrael came first and is by far the more stringent of the two. According, and we'll get that out of the way first, the bread's easier. Even for Svardim and not for Ashkenazim, for Pat Yisrael, Pas Yisrael, if a Jew lights the oven, obviously you need Ashkocha, the ingredients you assume is always kosher. I'm not talking about the ingredients. If the bread was made kosher, a Jew lit the oven, that's Pas Yisrael. For everybody, according to all opinions, there's no discussion. Bishul Yisrael, however, is a lot more difficult, and for Svardim, even that much more so difficult. The reason is that bread is more lenient is because wheat being bread being wheat is the sustenance of life. The gazelle is not accepted all around as people couldn't hold by it. They couldn't do it. People needed to eat bread. The bread you had to have, that's the sustenance. I can do without stir fries and I can do without an egg roll, but I need bread. So the Bishul Yisrael did become what it is, the halacha and stricter, and the bread is much more lenient. In America, all the breads you see in the stores, not in like a kosher bakery, but a Pathmark or a supermarket or Arnold's, whatever names they have, I don't know what exists today, but packaged bread on the supermarket shelf with different hechsher, and that's called pot halter. The best translation I believe is commercial bread, which means it's goyish bread, made with hashkacha, with mashgichim, so you guarantee everything, the ingredients are kosher. And it's commercial bread. The Hetayim say that the bread and the Bishul Yisrael and the wine, which will do next week, the reasons for it is all the same. They don't want to have that us getting too chummy with the goyim and hanging out together, drinking together, eating together. And unfortunately, America's living proof of what the outcome of that is. The assimilation level is what it is. But when it's a factory making bread, they say that's, we'll get to that tale for Bishul Yisrael as well. There's no personal intermingling with anybody. The baker in some factory in Wisconsin doesn't have an idea of Jew in New Jersey buying bread. It's not a problem. So pot kalter for Adavish Yisrael has become the standard from what I understand. There are those that are mocked on Pas Yisrael even as well. It's not as easy. The Mishnah Berurah writes and it isn't in Yana Lisbah Saris to make tshuva, right? It's between the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. For those who are not makpid during the year on Pas Yisrael, at least with those Saris to make tshuva, it's an inyan to be makpid on. So that's the bread in a nutshell. Basically, bread with a hefshah is either commercial bread, Pas Palter, or it's Pas Yisrael, and all that requires is the Jew has to light the oven. As far as the Bishul goes, there's two main criteria that throw a food item into the category of Bishul Yisrael, requiring Bishul Yisrael. That is Shalom Echaltai. It has to be a food item that's not eaten raw. Eggplant, for example. And it has to be Ma'oyu Sudas Malachim. It has to be fit for a king Suda. So, the first one is an easy definition. It's important to point out the definition is Minig HaMakom. That's what Halacha says, not me. Halacha says Minig HaMakom, meaning whatever the custom of the city, the state, or the country, depending on the circumstance, see, it would be the country more or less. In America, it might be, I don't know, it could be the state, I don't know. But if the minhag hamakom is to eat something raw, then you don't have to worry about bishul lachem. If the minhag hamakom is to eat it cooked, and you have a fetish, and you like raw potatoes, you're still compelled to have bishul yisrael for the potatoes. That's a very straight point in halacha, there's no confusion about it. And I can say one example that I recall, 20-some-odd years ago, when Mordechai Eliyahu was chief rabbi, and they brought him raw mushrooms, and he says, "This need Bishul Yisrael." And Israelis, I know for myself, because I used to, I like raw mushrooms, but they couldn't imagine a human being could eat a raw mushroom. First of all, they didn't know what a mushroom was, in truth. A mushroom is a new thing here, yet alone a raw mushroom. So it was a lot of back and forth in the beginning. It used to be considered Bishul Yisrael for mushrooms. I think today they say you don't have to. That became a realization. Many people put raw mushrooms in salads in one of the mill cafes. So that changed. But it's Minig HaMakom. In some countries, it could be Bishul Yisrael is required. In some countries, it's not. It's mamish, the Minig of the place. I asked the Shaila not too long ago about sushi. As I said, if everyone's eating sushi, it's becoming very popular. Perhaps that now means that fish no longer has to be Bishul Yisrael. At least the types of fish that are included in sushi. I don't know what they are, I don't eat the stuff, but I eat the real old sushi, heavy. Sushi, so the Rabbanim, basically the answer is very simple. The amount of sushi being ingested, amount, not meaning kilo per person, but the amount of people that eat it regularly is not sufficient to change the meal. And definitely, without a question, fish still requires fish and soy, even if somebody eats sushi.
It's an interesting statement when you said about the mushrooms. On one hand, they said they don't really eat them here, so how is their opinion of how it's
well, eaten? What happened is they started coming to the country, so they went to the chief rabbi and said, what do we do with this stuff? So he said first, what is it? You know.
Well,
it's obviously it's a lot deeper. The whole light up about it gave you the red alert. The second, the truth is you have to be careful that it's fresh. The second component is that shizur oil is sudat melachim, and this is one of the areas where, again, I compare. I'm not saying names, but it's Israel versus, we'll say, North America. In North America, many of the kashrus organizations, the definition for sudat melachim is so high that it's like a whopping head. It's unbelievable. Like, if you define that it's fit for a royal feast, and you define that it means that the chef has to have a master's degree from the Culinary Institute, someone on the level that would cook for the White House. Anyone else that cooks, it's not considered like real. It has to be a professional chef. So if you get it and you do it, it's not going for sudat melachim, so anything you make is not bishul soil. It's not a problem. So if you live your life by that definition, you pretty much can say you have no problem with bishul soil because we basically recategorized everything in the world. So you should be aware of that. Now, bishul soil, the common definition is what you'd see at a wedding and also what you'd serve to guests on Shabbos and Yom Kippur. So that means rakes are now bishul soil. Rabbi Yashiv was asked about potato chips, he said yes, issues, pretty much almost all the food. Even though an egg, for an example, and Halacha speaks about an egg, even though an egg can be eaten raw, again, the definition is what the norm is, and most people don't eat eggs raw, so eggs need issues as well.
You talked about the idea of the professional chef. Does it matter who cooks it or just what he would cook?
Has to be cooked on a level that the White House chef would do it.
It's not just actually what the dish is.
You have to have that kind of know-how and those abilities, which means pretty much everything wouldn't have to wipe out fish and soil, whereas an extra soil, you see what you see on the Shabbos table or the wedding, you see barakas, you see kugels, everything's fish and soil. And that's pretty much the Rabbanut agrees and the Haredim agree. It's actually something they agree on. That's a nice thing.
What is the Machlokes of tuna fish, whether it's royal or shulchan aruch?
Tuna fish is issues, first of all, it's a machlokas, we'll get to it in a little bit. Tuna fish is steamed in a ketor, a double jacketed kettle. There's two kinds. One is where steam goes into the pot, which is less of an issue because they say it's steam, it's not mamish cooking. What does bishul mean? For bishul soil, it means it has to be bishul, tigun, and the Hebrew doesn't get better, the English deteriorates, and you become illiterate in two languages. Bishul Yisrael applies to actual cooking, roasting, and frying. Okay, even though halachically we say kvush kumu bushal, that pickling is like cooking, and maliach kuoteach, and salting is like boiling, that has to do with inyan talovis. But when it comes to Bishul Yisrael, pickling, smoking, and salting do not apply. So the goy takes a mackerel, smokes it for you just the way you like it, gives it to you, there's no problem with you whatsoever, according to Ashkenazim's one. That's also an agreement that bishul refers to cooking, roasting, and frying. It does not refer to salting, pickling, and smoking. So that means these jars you see of pickled vegetables, that's not shalach. So for an example, if you go to a Chinese place, and the guy's doing a stir fry with carrots, and celery, and peppers, you don't need bishul soil. If they throw eggplant in there, you do. Chips needs bishul soil, eggplant does also. Carrots don't because it's eaten raw. So the two components, it has to be eaten raw, that there's a custom that it's eaten raw or cooked, and the other component is that it has to be fitting for Shabbos mess, we call it. Wood, so that's one of them. Let's see, if a non-Jew cooks the food, even the Jew's dishes, a problem created by it. The issues here, and I'm giving an overview, it's mamish, I'm not qualified to give piska halacha for it, and for people who have domestics, whether because you can afford it makes life easier, or because someone chashom is ill and they need assistance, the problem is enormous, and you really need to sit and consult with your rabbi and go over the issues because a place like Hanoi, where the population got much older over the years, and there were a lot of Filipinos in the neighborhood, and they've consulted with our board members. There's humongous issues. Can they cook? Can they not cook? I know some families, for example, family members come once a week, cook for the whole week, and then the workers heat up. Other people have worked at other entertainment. But you have to understand, if you have goyim in your house, it becomes a very problematic issue, as we'll get into. Okay, it's basically that the rabbanim, again, is to keep us away from the goyim, whether it's drinking together, eating together, breaking bread together. Halacha to our situation, we should not be mingling with our Jews for it. Another inyan is...
I just wanted to say about the terminology, I think, I'm not sure, but I think it's visual star, not visual aku. You're not allowed to eat because that's like somebody who's Obed or Avodah Zarah, you know? I'm not even Avodah Zarah. I think it's Bishul Stam. It's like Yain Stam. You have Yain Stam.
You know, Stam Yainam you have, but you don't have Cholov Stam. That the OU made. Like, that doesn't exist in Shulchan Aruch. When Shulchan Aruch is Cholov Akum. Well, not, I checked it out with Linowitz to double check myself. That's an American made up word because Akum is two in your face. So the OU started with Cholov Stam. It sounds much nicer. But that's a made-up word. So you said that there is Stam Yinam, which we'll do next week, which is the difference between Yai Nesek and Stam Yinam. But it's all about Bishul Yisrael is Bishul Akum. Akum is a goy. It's not a derogatory term.
Okay.
Akum is an abbreviation, or Beit Kol Chabim. That's what you might use in Akum. So, truth is, not all of them are, but some are.
Wait,
so Muslims are not idol worshippers, so they're easier for the wine, by the way.
According to the Spartan, as the role Bishul Akum.
We'll get into
okay.
it. Okay. Say, this is the background stuff we're not going to get into. Differences between Bat Goyim and Bishul Akum and Bishul Goyim we did. Okay. For Ashkenazim, according to the Piskei Halacha of the Ramah, a Jew basically has to light this. Again, everything we say is under the premise that there's Ashkacha and all the ingredients are kosher and everything. Obviously, it's not just enough light. Walking to Chashom and Trade Place, the Jew lights the stove and everyone says, wow, this is right to me. So we're working on the premise of a kosher environment. A Jew has to light the stove, preferably according to most, what's Halacha L'maisa, what's done in the field, is it has to be an Orthodox Jew. Ashkacha is an Eretz Yisrael, and Mr. Badatzim and the Mahadrim say it has to be a full Jew, not just a Jew. And that's a biggie, so especially someone's Mechal Shabbos Professor. And we can get off on that tangent, there's a Machlokas. What is a Mechal Shabbos Professor? Who's a public Shabbos desecrator? So those that are Megill that say he needs warning, he needs aiding. So it doesn't exist, it doesn't happen, no one's a Mechal Shabbos Professor. So that's the most lenient approach. The more common approach that I've heard and sort of see that's what the world and Kashmir lives with. The Mumo, Machal Shabbos, the Fahesi is someone when they've reached the point when they're walking down the street on Shabbos and they see their parents or their Rebbe and they're not embarrassed anymore. So, like, never if someone goes off the death in the beginning, you see a family member and you see the cigarette that's flung on the side, how are you, Shabbat Shalom. And a few months later, unfortunately, the cigarette stays in my mouth, how you doing? I hope you had a good week. When you've reached the point where you don't hide the cigarette or you don't jump into the alley hard because you were not wearing Shabbos clothes, that's when your Machal Shabbos for Fahesi. And again, the different kashrut organizations may define it differently, and all these things come into play. Like I said, I don't think, if you remember last year, Rabbi Kuba that spoke eloquently, it was I think the last lecture, so like he has this master plan to put together a large spreadsheet of all these halachas. That's the whole idea of third party auditing, you mentioned is his idea, and he's correct. And then you could go down the list, but that's this, and this, and this. And just go check, 1 to 50, what do you do, what do you don't do. Then you could look at this spreadsheet and have a real idea of what's going on out there. And that's lemaisa what you need to do, because the inyanim are so high, like you say, you let Jews cook, yes. Is it not religious Jews? Yes, religious Jews. Is it going, is it not going? And the list just keeps growing, that no one really has a handle on it, no one's even making the effort. Now it's a dream. Okay, so a Jew has to light the gas for Ashkenazim. For Spartan, he also has to put the pot onto the gas. And he also has to play an active role in the cooking. Okay, I can say for the Rabbanu Beit Shemesh, at least when I was hanging out here in the summer months, I'd be surprised if it changed. It's been this way for 2 years. I saw the Swiss policy. Any place with Mahadrin and Beit Shemesh, without exception, is Bishul Yisrael according to Spartan and Ashkenazim alike, without exception. That's for sure. The chief rabbinate, its protocol, its own regulations say the Mahadran rabbinate has to accommodate Svarim, meaning Rishon Sof is Svarim. In Yerushalayim, Rabbi Shlazinger, who's the poster of Yerushalayim, says they don't. So either Mahadran, Rabbi Yerushalayim, Yamapufer, I'll pity the Beis Yosef, you gotta check each restaurant and take it on its own merit. He says the Feirush that they don't take that responsibility and they can't stand by it. Oh, for sure, there's no comparison. A non-Flum Jew is still a Jew. With a non-Flum Jew, you're more concerned with, you're not as concerned with Bishu Yisrael, you're more concerned with that he knows what he does and doesn't trade for nothing. He needs good Ashtafa. There's no comparison, a Jew's a Jew, a boy's a boy. Unless the different Svarim, I mean, say, Dafke, if it's like a Reformed Jew, then it's in many ways worse than a boy. No matter what he makes, he can't touch it. Because he's not that he's a boy, but he's Jewish and he's actively working to destroy Allah. And this guy, he can't eat anything he makes. Right, there was a story in Ashdod, it's not that long ago, that a woman opened up a bakery.
Oh, yes.
And because she's a missionary, the Rav Amnit said she needs to have full-time mashgiach. And she went to the Supreme Court and had it overturned because she said, why does she have to be treated any differently? It's not Mahadran, why do you have to be all day? And Rabbi Shina, the Abbezdin there, said, Mapi told we're not giving a hechsher. And it went back and forth a few rounds in court. He held his own, she held on. I don't know what happened to them. I stopped following them. I bored them for a while. But it became an issue, right? Look, you have a few good ones coming up now too in the Bagas. You get them in the papers. The reform movement just went last week. They petitioned. Why there's in Yerushalayim, there's 33 civil service rabbanim. I mean, the different neighborhoods. You know, Ramat Beit Shemesh, I don't know what it is, Ramat Aleph, Ben. So there's different rabbanim, there's different shmunot, there's different neighbors. And Yerushalayim is the largest in the country, there's 33 rabbanim. They petitioned that how come there's only religious rabbis there, they want to have conservative reform, Mahavir rabbis, and even women. Because it's the majority population of Yerushalayim is not Haredi or Orthodox, it would make sense to have them. So that's in the Supreme Court too. Should be interesting. Every time, like, Manishurim calms down, somebody finds a new reason to crank it up, which is a wonderful tension. Okay.
Let's just be clear once again. Well, this is not Manishurim's fight. This is the Rebbe establishment.
This is everyone's fight, obviously. This is the Karonia, because if they win in each line, it obviously applies everywhere. Okay. And again, Bishul Akum, Bishul Soil, I like that term. Bishul Soil is not it's not a chumash. It's a preferish halacha written in Shulchan Aruch. Like it's a Ashkenazim. It's much simpler. Any store, you know. And there's questions, by the way, people would ask, and eventually would have asked it tonight. We'll get touched close enough to what about a pilot light, which we're accustomed to in America. The rule in Eretz Yisrael, they don't accept it. They say it's such a grummer. It's so like fourth hand. So someone with a pilot light, and then you turn this on, it likes that. Same thing they say a lot of Ashkenazim. If the guy calls up with a cell phone. They use that in Eretz Yisrael, they use it in America too. Mashpiach calls a cell phone, answers a code, and the computer program matches authorized cell numbers with the computer, and only that phone can call with the code, and that turns on the ovens. For an example, in the area called Nachali Road, Wadi Ara, Rish Shishim Rechamesh, or the Triangle, whatever you know, which is predominantly Israeli Arab. There's not a lot of Jews there, and the ones that are there are not having an easy life. Until Chavish opens up, then it'll change. But the point is, there's a lot of factories there putting out like chametzim, pickles, olives, all kinds of stuff. And the mashgichim don't hang out there a lot. So they have setups there that the mashgiach phones in, calls up, and lights it by the phone. But that's it, across the board, don't accept it. They don't accept the pilot light. The Eretz Yisrael doesn't work. I can't say what they do in America. I know some do accept it, some don't. I don't remember. Like I know, if you take a spiral coil, and you put that into an oven, and that remains on a constant heat, or like a 1,000-watt bulb, something, a constant heat that always stays on. So that's a heter that's used by some of the Ashbachas in the United States, that as long as there's always heat, so if the goy turns in the oven, it doesn't really matter because that heat was on anyway. Lamaisa, people say that's a shvach heter on a good day, because you could put that piece of bread next to that bulb, and you'll have whiter hair than I have, and that thing won't be cooked yet. So there's heat from the bulb, it's not baking the loaf of bread, it's heat, big deal. And until he turned on the oven, the bread wasn't baking. So what are you playing games and tell me the oven is constantly on? It doesn't really work. But so some of the Ashkachas do accept it, some of the, all of that stuff in the Eshes Yisrael basically doesn't wash, it doesn't work here. Whatever I told you, actually, just to be comprehensive, you'll get a little read in here. Okay. Tuna fish. You wanted to ask about tuna fish. Oh, I would jump around. Tuna fish, yeah, I started that. I remember saying something about a kitor.
Okay.
The Minchas Yitzchak, for example, was a biggie in Kashas. No one writes for him on Kashas, but I bought him. He was from England originally. Chavedi sort of fellow, became like the Abbezanay, the Chavedi, that he met Aliyah years to come. But he was really a big guy in the kashrus industry. He's Minchas Yitzchak. Many, many things that we live with today, or we can't live with today, is because of Minchas Yitzchak. He gave a heter for Kitor. He said that Kitor is not considered cooking. Okay, this is not everyone accepts that heter. There's also, I can't tell you, I know enough about it to define which is which. I know there's a difference. If it's a kitor where the steam comes into the pot, then that's considered less. That's considered. Kitor is a double jacketed kettle. It's like a humongous pressure cooker. Humongous, bigger than this building. That's how big these things are. Basically, there's a boiler system. The boiler has hot water, and it runs through a system of these kettles. The water returns, cools down, and it just keeps, it's a closed system, it keeps repeating, and that's how the food industry works there. It's probably one of the most complicated and troublesome and worrisome items in the food industry, because you have to realize when the water runs by a pot, it's bleoed, it absorbs. So it's in a pot, goes into the water. So if there's cat food or dog food in one of the pots, then it's strafe water, and then it goes to the next pot, and that one would have been close to tuna, but now it's strafe tuna. So when the Mashgichim go to these places in China, and they have a kitor system literally the size of Beit Shemesh. So they spend weeks, they have to travel around beforehand and see, is this one big system, can you close certain parts off? Because you have to block it to know which pots are getting the water and the return water, and nothing else can be allowed. That's like Eid HaChavei, they send the team first down to know which pots they can use, how they're going to set it up. And Mashgichim that go to these places tell me this is where the Kuash Kochas really fail on this world, no one has any clue. That they see their 10 pots are good. So again, you think of a pot the size of this building. It's an amazing thing. I've seen slides of it. I've never been out in the Far East looking at it. So they see their 5 pots are good. They don't realize there's 10 more half a mile down the road cooking shrimp. And they've trafed up everything, and they're serving mamish, trafe up the color of the oak. There's no machlokas, God forbid, that's what could happen. So when the steam comes right into the pot and cooks the cans, or the food, whatever the situation is, that's where they're more makel, they say, because that's steam, it's not visual, it's not roasting, it's not frying. It's more of a problem when it's a double wall, and the steam comes in between the walls, it's two different types. That one, they say, is more problematic. One of the big machlokas is with the OUs of Rav Soloveitchik, his heter is that the kitor also, he says, is not cooking. And that's what the OU basis. There's many problems with the OU tuna for those who don't accept it, but that's one of the big ones. That they use the kitor and they say it's not cooking, alright? Here it's not so simple, and many don't accept the heter, some do, some don't. With that's a by and large. I can't tell you, of course, the board would teach one does, so I'm not going to be responsible and say, I don't remember enough, I don't know what they all do. Okay, but the kitor is a separate entity because of the steam. But the tuna, by the way, since you're on it, we'll go a step. We're not going to get to it in any other lecture, but if you follow Houston Kosher News, I think last year I announced Rabbi Landau had tuna fish for the first time ever. For those that only Rabbi Landau, that was a big thing in life. So why did he not give tuna, let's say, Eid HaChavei did? So he feels the way the tuna industry works today, they're out at sea, they catch the tuna in nets, they throw them in a saltwater brine, and eventually they get back to shore. Sometimes they take the fins and scales off in a way, so let's assume they don't. If once you've taken off the simenei kashrus, it becomes more complicated. So let's assume these fish have fins and scales. So number one, Rabbi Landau always told me that they don't check fish, they go by they catch the net. The net is big enough to hold the tuna, but the smaller fish get through. That's what they maintain. So they'll say it. So like the American Ashkenazi says, so 1 in 1,000, 1 in 2,000 is a non-kosher fish. It's like butter, lechakilu, but you have it 100 ways possible. What's the way about it? And they said, no, not going to lechakilu for the term fish in there. You have to check each fish. So Rabbi Lehn, I couldn't find anyone willing to check each fish the way he wanted it. And the bigger problem for him is, he touched upon, was pushkumi vashal. When you pickle something, it's like cooking it. So he said, when the goyim throw the fish into the saltwater brine, and they get back to shore a day and a half later, and these fish are dead, but they're well preserved because they were salted. So that's bishalakum mahadrim. There's no way around that. So he said, your tuna was bishalakum before you even got near the keto. It has nothing to do with the keto. You made a bishalakum and you brought the fish in the sea. And he finally found one place that's small enough that's willing to accommodate his ways. So he made tuna. I don't know if it's still out there, but it was a limited run. I don't know. That was one of his problems, was throwing the tuna into the blind. Some of the other issues with the tuna in America is that probably the biggest issue is that it's off-site, as they call it. Off-site meaning there's not a mashkiach anywhere to be found. And I know because some of the mashkiachim that go for the Eid HaRedit and for different badatsim here, bells, to do the tuna, know for sure. So they tell me, like, they walk into a place and they walk in into the guy and he says, when was the last time you saw someone like me? So he said, the other man was here 6 months ago. And that's the way it works. So I want them to come around twice a year. And they say that to fulfill the Shulchan Aruch's demand for mitzvahs, for deterrence, they have, you know, very heavy-duty legal binding contracts. They say a company like Starkus would never ever compromise anything it does and jeopardize its name. A hoarding company like Starfish would never diminish the integrity of their tuna fish. So all these things they accept as enough deterrence, and luckily that the mashkiach doesn't have to come around and everything runs basically on trust and legal, you know, what you could do if you catch it. So that's a lot of, you know, so they don't accept that either.
Starfish tuna is one of the greatest.
Right, the Eid HaRedis is special ones, obviously. The Eid HaRedis and Bells and Aguda, they go down. Those are like kasha, the plans. What they do is they go down and they make runs, which is also why sometimes you'll find your favorite tuna and then sometimes it may disappear for a few weeks. They go down and do a run, they kasha the place, they make X amount of lifts of tuna, I have no idea how many cans. And then when they see it's running out, the supplier orders again, they go and do it again. They don't constantly manufacture, like Starkist is always making tuna and always has no you. Or I'm still saying an example, but it'd be another hechsher too, makes no difference. Whereas the hechsher over here will make a special trip. One of the rabbanim, when I took my mashkiach course, one of the rabbanim who does the fish, used to run the rabbanim mahadrim shalayim. He said to me, it's an absurd thing. Like he said, in China, for example, when you're 14 years old, you go to work and you get your little fish cleaning, cutting implement. And when you're 90, when you retire, you have to give that thing back. If not, like, you got to return like 10 years' pay. This is your tool, and don't let anything happen to it. It says they take the tool home at night, and they bring it back in the morning. They say, okay, so he says, they use it. What do you think these people eat? He said, they eat every, the schutzen and the schwatzen, they eat every direct that Hashem says you should eat, they eat. So it is not bizarre to assume that if a guy's taking home this professional fish cleaning tool, he's going to use it at home too. And then the next morning he brings it back. He said, that alone is the reason he said I wouldn't eat any of the American food. When the Badatsim come in from Eretz Yisrael and they kasha place for tuna, they take all of these tools, they all get kasha, and they get locked up at night. They don't take them home. He said, it's an absurd thing. You're letting people that eat the most abhorrent, you know, trace stuff in the world take these tools home and
so
bring
what,
back
OU
into
is
not, we're not picking on OU. The American Hechsherim do what they call off-site tuna. That's the bottom line. People aren't around. They set up standards and things are with much halachic backing. It's not hefka, but at the end of the day, there's not a hashkocha to read this. The rabbanim are not standing there watching the run. It's done without a mashkiach present most of the time.
Now, what about the camels and all? They have hashkochas. I know there's places that have the Ramanud, I don't know, they have secret cameras in the hidden cameras in the Mifal and
in the Far East?
No, here in Israel.
Oh yeah, yeah. Israel's much easier. What yeah. Israel? Israel is Israel.
So I'm saying maybe that then in the Far East also. I don't know.
If they do, well, they do. They're that secret. No one knows about it, so they're not really doing anybody any good. I don't know. Maybe the Rabbanut doesn't know about it either. I'm not aware of it. Could be you're right. I have no idea. I've never heard of it. I don't know. But I know the difference here is here the tuna fish is being cooked. It's a processed item. It's not a pure item. Well, bottom line is it's regarded here like everything else. You need kashering, ashkocha, finish, you leave, you pat up, see you next time you come back. In the United States, that's a different standard. For all the halakhic leniencies that they have allowed themselves, they say it's offsite, not what they do. Not thinking that anyone has to kash from over another. There's Talmidei Chachamim and Gedolim that decided this is acceptable. Those that eat it, eat it. Those that don't. Yeah, they also have tuna with the dairy designation on the can, which the Rav Anud absolutely is like, that's like never, ever, ever coming into this country.
To confirm, I understand, which I've understood, that the OU when it comes to Pesach is supposedly more modern.
According to the manual, if I remember correctly, then they're actually watching what's going on for Pesach. Right, so meaning like if you buy the Pesach tuna, it's Bishul Yisrael, and it's Hashgacha Tzvigas. Basically, if you want to buy all your tuna and you want to have like the Israeli version, just buy the Pesach tuna and stock up. It's a way out. Some people do it for other products as well, especially for people that need non gluten products to take advantage of the Pesach industry and stock up. I don't hear. I said about Landau. But Landau said when they throw fish, but Landau said when they catch the fish at sea, throw it into a saltwater brine, and it soaks for over 24 hours. May 8th, over 24 hours. That's kibush kibush mishal, and it's special, and that's it. You're done.
I'm saying that's quite, it's quite out of a serious time. So what does that show that that's how they get around that? I don't know that it is or they.
If I understand correctly, and this is based on a vague memory. That they say that the Indian is the actual concentration of salt solution, it's not enough salt. I think that's the Indian, it's not enough salt.
When they throw the fish into the saltwater brine, would it make a difference if the fish is alive when they throw it in
or not? Doesn't matter, he's not staying alive. It's pretty cold water, and I don't think by
being. But the one is coming after it died by itself.
It's not my expertise, I'm just repeating what I do know and what I can share. I'm sure there's a lot of inyanim. Obviously, most of the world, basically except for Avlandau, accepts. Look, there's other steps along the way. The different tunas do have different rules. Like one, for example, the goyim out at sea. Well, someone came up with a good idea, and it's a very good idea. You save time. These guys are out there anyway. They send a bunch of extra guys, and they start taking off the scales and fins, and they come already. They're clean. So they said that's very nice. When you're coming back, so now you have fish without some of their caches. How do I know what it is? I only learned last year that. Of what we call tuna in the world, there's dozens of different types of tuna or subtypes, whatever you call. Most of them are trade. So it's not even all tuna's kosher. It's not the case. Most of the tunas are not kosher. So you need to have some kashas on fish. And I can tell you in store, if you go into a store, for example, like David Dugin that has a Hefsha, and Hefsha says it covers whatever it covers, you buy a bag of fish that he put 10 fillets in, so you're fine. But I see people like in Machan Yehuda, for example, they go to stores without hashgachas. If you know what a carp looks like I know my parents always thought they knew. If you bought a fresh carp, it's no big deal. Well, not the worms, all of that stuff aside. I'm talking about the simonic kashas. You know what a carp looks like, you take a carp home. You know, he beats it over the head there with the club, and you do it at home, whatever you prefer. But you know it's a carp, it's a kosher fish, you see fins, you see scales, you're done. But once you take fillets, I don't care if they're like triangular that look like a sole or whatever things look like. There's no marking on the bag, there's no hashgacha b'shtoi, you're not going to buy it. It's the same as, you know, basar shumis alei me'al ayin, meat that's out of sight, applies to meat and poultry, it doesn't apply to fish. But you're not, mitzad sheni, you're not allowed to buy fish, basar shumis alei kashrus. You have no idea what kind of fish you're buying. And there are a lot of non-kosher fish that are being sold in Eretz Yisrael to them, unfortunately. There's also never called the shvatzim and shvatzim, in Yerushalayim, I see it all over the stores. I'm sorry to say. Within a 10-minute walking distance of my house, there's five stores that sell pork products and all the everything you want. The Russian Aliyah has apparently created a large market for this stuff. I like this. Never. Okay, so we're getting all the way back to Bishul Yisrael. So if Ashkenazim again, the Jew has to light the gas. Okay, in commercial kitchens in Israel, one commonly finds non-Jews in order to adhere to Bishul Yisrael. The Jew must light the gas and place the pot on the gas. So the other Shlomo, I told you, He said that last that I heard on the radio called Fight Interview, it's not secret information. He announced for the Tovat HaTzibur, be responsible, that Rabbanut Yerushalayim Hadra does not accept, does not claim Nishnas Sof HaSfarim. Those that are mocked on it have to go and check it out for themselves. He said we can't do it. The truth is, I don't think I've seen the majority. I've seen a lot of kitchens in, I've seen kitchens with a lot of non-Jewish workers. And simply, I think he's responsible by saying that. You're not going to have a shkacha tzmuda, they don't have a mashkiach the whole time. And I went into one place, not in business anymore, it's a Subaru, the pizza shop. So they had seven or eight people working in the store. Like the manager was an Arab, the six or seven kitchen people were Arabs, and mashkiach was there full time. You know, and this was a Dati Lui fellow, and a serious guy, like a Hezbollah kind of guy. And he finally said he was going to quit. They went out of business and they preempted him. And he couldn't take it. He said, I feel like Fayyid. I can't even go to the bathroom here. I can't leave for a second. He's going all over the place. Like he tries to put the pizza in the oven. He tried to do everything he could do. But obviously, he said, people come in and tell me to mock it on business. So I said, go somewhere else. He said, I'm not taking this responsibility. He said, how much can one person do? We've got seven guys in the store and he's fighting all of them. And I saw stores like that in Malcolm Mall as well. I went to the Mashkiach and he was there. So you, our business office farm is absolutely not. Right? The why had Tatum in commercial settings, our Ravaji gives a big heta, because the Inyan Chatnut of becoming an acquaintance, becoming friendly, he said it doesn't exist in a commercial setting because the guy's cooking 1,000 portions, who knows who, the other guy doesn't know. Just all the reasons that the Rabbanu feared it, he gives a heta on it. Who lies on it or not, that's everyone's own thing. But Mordechai Eliyahu on the flip side, not only he said you can't rely on that heter, he also said the heter that, like the Tzitz Eliezer talked about, canned stuff, like a can of peas. At least when I grew up, everyone said you could buy peas, you didn't even need a heter. You went to America, peas are peas, they're in water, and there's nothing trade for them. You don't need a shalchi, you're going to forget about Bishlachan. Obviously things have changed because in the mass production food industry today, everything needs a shalchi. But the point being, people ask the question, as far as I was just looking at it now at Tshuva, do you need, first of all, another criteria as we said is the lavet and the pot that you're talking about when you're eating a food that's served in the Sefirat Melachim is also eaten with bread. I'm saying a can of peas, you don't eat with bread. Peas are peas, bread is bread. If you want to talk to me about the meat, the chicken, you eat bread, but not the peas. So a lot of people hold the heter, a lot of people don't hold the heter. These are things to ask you about, make a decision based on your own learning, however you get along with it. But the point is, like Rav Mordechai Eliyahu said, absolutely not everything that's cooked without exception, that is the oil is without melachim, that is not even more, must be pushing swell. That's it. It doesn't matter if they're cooking the 10,000 people, you don't know who the cook is, you don't know who's eating.
Bishul. That means third,
Shlish
Bishul.
Right, Bishul Swell, which we get to, we'll go in whatever order it goes. Concept called Machal Ben Yosai. Some poskim say half cook, low poskim hold a third cook. The Ashkach has worked with a third cook to the best of my knowledge, without exception. That means I can give you a very good example. If you go into, for those that know Yerushalayim, you sent the one to Mall. So there's a Chinese place in Korn, I think it's called Korosin, or Korosin something or other. So if you go there, you would say, how's this Mahadrim? Happens to be, at least the last time I was there, months ago, it was outstanding Mashkiach. He's been there for 7 years. And you see the goy with the wok doing up the bell, and you say, wow, where's the Bishul Yisrael? So Mashkiach is there in the morning, he does everything one third. They take all the carrots, they're this, they're that, they're, and they throw them all back in separate pots. And if you look carefully, you'll see they're not raw anymore, they were cooked. But one third cooked means when you come to order your lunch 3 hours later, you're still getting something fresh enough that tastes fresh. And he was Yotze Bishul Yisrael for Slav Nationality Lunch. Okay, so not a lot. Places do that. That's 100% legitimate. Cooking has to be one third done. That's it. That's what has to be done. One third. With Machal Ben Yosai. So what? Halacha says after a third done, it's edible.
You said sparrows, and they give a front of town because there are still sparrows in Malcolm Mall. In front of town.
I was talking to Yafa. Okay.
Yeah, what actually? Malcolm Mall. If you look there, they're not there.
Okay. Okay, good, you said it. You're right. I was going to town. I was talking to Chob Yafo. It was where Nebuch the Begur was that they moved down the block. I was referring to when they were down the block.
Let me touch on this. If it's cooked with my boys, what is the situation of the cake?
We'll get to it. Depends who you ask. But Mordechaio was like the most machmir I'm aware of on anything. I will give you a story. I think it's really cool. To me, it makes 100% sense. Others don't. But to me, in my mind, it worked. He went to Chutz La'aretz, and they kept bringing him soda to drink, and he wouldn't drink it. So finally, said to Chodav Av, "What's the deal with the Coca-Cola? It has Ashkocha." He says, "Bishulakum." "What are you talking about?" He said, "Well, oil is suda malachim. There's not a wedding in the world that doesn't have Coke, right? And you can't eat it raw. The process involves cooking. This is as bishulakum as anything gets, and this is probably one of the most prominent drinks served in the White House and everywhere in the world. You can't drink it." And I said, "Wow! I never would have thought that in my life." I thought that was great. And so Mordechaio, there's a lot of stories about in Zasal about things. The one where they tried to serve him the cup of tea in Me'ach HaZavav and it fell a few times, and finally they went inside to the kitchen and checked, and the Av worker boiled water for himself to make tea earlier in the day. So he was one of the poskim that held that the goy cooked with a pot, you had to tov in the pot, you had to kash in the pot before you could use it again.
So my question would be, is smart you have to be masculine? In other words, if it's cooked by according to the svar, would it would have to be kasher? Or can you be samech on the Ashkenaz and just for the cook?
Most people don't say it has to be kasher. The problem becomes a bigger problem if a goy is cooking in a restaurant. It's not a problem for anyone. You can eat it, not eat it, but it's not trade from the place up. Okay, because the problem becomes, and that's where it becomes a big problem, is when a goy is cooking in your house for themselves, not for you, for themselves. Like if the goy served dinner, everyone's finished, now you go and clean up, you do the dishes, now he or she wants to make herself dinner, and they start making eggs and stuff. A, you cannot eat anything they give you. Absolutely, according to Ashkenazim, it's part of the life, that food is also 1,000% without any heter. And B, most of them that I'm aware of will tell you that you have to cash those pots too, you can't use them here. A goy cooking for themselves has to have separate dishes from your house, and you're not allowed to touch anything they make. That's like the ultimate bishulakum, even in your own house, because they're cooking it for themselves.
Even if they live from the same pilot, a light that exists in light?
Same stove, same fry pan, same everything.
What if they're making the boat?
Then they're making it for you. They're making it for you. Like I said, it's, look, Bav, Ben Zion Abba Shaul gives a heta. I don't think Ashkenazim hold by a big time. I don't think most Swadim hold. Some do, some don't. I don't know. I don't know percentage. So he gives that to an example that electric is not the same as gas. So people that become Nebuch, Lo Aleinu, that become incapacitated and need help at home, so one of the things they do is they take out the gas range and put in electric. That's already, according to that Pesach Halacha, you've now eliminated a lot of your problems. There's a lot of Rav Sternberg. Shlita is the Av Beis Din Neir Chabedet, who lives in Hanof. He's put out there's a ton of stuff out there. Someone who really has to deal with the situation needs to sit with the Rav and go over A, B, C, and D. It's not a general Shia and find out. It's also someone who has domestic help that includes cooking. You really need to get the laws checked out, because you could really be having serious problems in your house. This is something I know, families where the people light the stove and cook, and it's a non-starter, there's nowhere to go with it. Even if the person's cooking, you have to light the gas for them. Now I'll light the gas. You know, someone. Again, it's just like, you know, with Hilchos Shabbos. You can't compare an invalid to someone who's wealthy or allocates money, not wealthy, for in-house domestic. Someone who's a chole, she'en bo sakana. Forget that. Someone's chole, she'en bo sakana is already a whole different world. But even a chole, she'en bo sakana, there's a lot of leniencies that fall for that person that don't apply to you and I. For example, if you go to visit someone and spend Shabbos in the hospital, in a place like Shabbat said, I know how they cook that kitchen, I've been through it a few times. So the chole in bed, l'chadchila, can eat the food. Why anyone would want to eat the food? It happens to be the worst food in any hospital I've ever seen. But although the visit was cafeteria, is pretty good. But the chole can eat that food, l'chadchila, like you think to yourself, they get daisa, they get farina, or some equivalent that a Shabbos morning, how can you serve that? Cholas allowed to eat it, there's no question, no one's, Shabbat said it runs on the highest level. The visitor cannot eat the food that they give the Cholam Shabbos. The Chilul Shabbos that's involved under halachic guidelines for Cholas, that's permitted for the patients only. And sometimes people don't realize they eat the stuff that the patient doesn't eat, and they're not allowed to eat the Shabbos. It's just the point, it's a sideline. I'm not getting into the Shabbos.
Are we expecting Mashiach's son to keep to his father's standards?
As soon as I know about the Hashgacha, I'll be happy to continue writing about it. We were supposed to go up last week to see the Shmita. It didn't happen. Eventually. I will say, to his credit, he's pretty to the right in his Piskei Halacha having to do with not just renting homes to Arabs, but also for Kashrus. He's the head of the rabbinate artsy of the Bargain for Station Department. That's his specialty. And he really does Kashrus because of him and the Ashkenazi Rav Apisvitsky, happens to be a Chabadnik or whatever. Those two keep spot on a level which is probably, I would say, if every city had Kashrus like Tzvat, you wouldn't have the Badatsim for the most part. The reason all of this exists is because they're not doing their job. That's the same truth. You go to Tzvat, there's no fussing around, there's no playing the Shabbos, you're not closing 2 minutes before, you're not opening 2 minutes before. There's Bishri Swer, where it's supposed to be. It's Kashrus, the way it's supposed to be, what you'd expect. Tzvat does an amazing job. And they will yank that $2 fast away without thinking twice. They have no problem. You'll do it their way or you won't do it at all. But it's sad. I hinted to it in the article. A lot of people got annoyed. There's always politics involved, like I say many times. If anyone thinks there's no politics in Kashrus, they're fools. But if you think it's all politics, then you're bigger fools. But the point being, the Eidah Haredit gave a Hashkoch in a few stores in Tzvat. Mendy's being one of them. That's the one I remember. So as a result, Rav Mordechai got quite perturbed, to put it mildly. So he yanked the Rabbanan Hefsher away, and like, how dare the Eidah Haredit come from Yerushalayim to Tzvat to give a Hefsher my city who needs you. So the stores, for whatever reason, decided that the small amount of people that weren't going to eat, I might as well get Eidah Haredit, and then everyone can eat. They're doing it for business decisions. And not only did he yank the Hefsher, but he got the Chief Rabbanut Kashrus enforcement guys to put out a bulletin saying that the following stores in Tzfat no longer have a Rabbanut Hefsher, they don't have a approved Hefsher. That's why when you read those bulletins, you have to know how to dance between the sentences. Basically, sometimes it'll say a store has no Hashgacha, that means there's no Hashgacha. Sometimes it'll say that there's no Eid Hashem or Rabbanut Mekomi, which tells you there's a Hefsher from somebody else. It may not be a good one, but there's a hashtag. So that's how they have to learn how to read their words. So sometimes, more often than not, it just says there's a hashtag from someone else. And they're right, by the way. The law is the law. They have to give, you need to have a Rabbanut Hefsher before you can have another one. In this case, though, the Rabbanut took it away for no reason. But that's, in the meantime, as far as I know, the stores still have Eidah Haredit and not the Rabbanut. Yeah.
Now, anything about what's going on in the airport eateries?
Yes, the airport.
Since when they opened up, it was the funniest hashgacha. I've never seen anything like it of it's the Rabbanut
Artsy,
but no city.
It's Rabbanut Artsy. So if we go back to
Artsy,
right? If we go back to our friend in the pickle factory in Wadi Ara, where they start the ovens with the cell phone, that's Rabbanut Artsy too. There's no local religious council, not a Jewish one, in the triangle, which we mentioned before. That's Wadi Ara, Nachalilon. That's where the Arabs live. So because there's no local religious council, the Rabbanut Artsy fills in. The airport used to be, the Rav Masha, the airport, is a fantastic human being. His name is Rav Nisim El Maliach, also a Chabadnik. But he has a shlichus, he's getting people put on tefillin, he got sold into the shul, he's putting kashrus into the airport. The guy's great. Over the years, he got stores of people in Mechal Shabbos to close on Shabbos and start davening, and he bought the stores that two or three of the stores there were really keeping Shabbos, at least closing down and coming to shul sometimes. And then the Rabbanut Artsy woke up one day and realized, wow, there's all this business in the airport that we could be having. We missed this one. So they came into Ben Gurion and said, you can't give Hashgacha here. You're the Rav of the airport. We're the Rabbanut. So we're giving the Hashgacha. So the Hashgacha changed from the Rav of Ben Gurion Airport to Rabbanut Artsy. And then they mamish told all the stores, if you'd like, by the way, you can open Shabbos again. And they all did. So that's the Rabbanut Artsy. I wouldn't drink the water. How does that work for you? Not even the water in the paper cup.
But there's nowhere to eat it. Like, if you have there to is. Wait in there.
Depending what Hashem you're doing. If you go past, if you go into the terminal where you're hanging out, that's where the coffee shops and all those things are, there's nowhere to eat. If you go to the next stage where you're allowed to go, towards the flight, but right before the passport control, where there's, if you want to use Badatz Beit Yosef, there's one or two stores in there with that. There's, what's it called? A pizza something or other. I don't know, Pizza Hut. One of these like chain names. I was there a few weeks ago, I went and looked. take a lot of money with you, it's a fortune. But they have one or two Badas Beit Yosef places, and I'm told, past the security, Rabbi Elmaliach told me, there's also another few, I think, Beit Yosef. You know, I couldn't get in there, and it was too much of a hassle. He didn't want to let me in, so we let it go. If you ever need his number, you want to go to the airport, I'll give you his number. He's very accessible, speaks probably four or five languages that I'm aware of. English is one of them. He's a very, very fine person who really cares. There's a lot of good guys out there from Rabbi Nut, they really are. Rabbi Nut is a disaster. So you will also find that extra one, back to the pickles and the olives, stuff like that. You'll see, it says Rabbi Nut. So that means that would tell you this stuff's coming from the Arab areas. And that's Tashkacha, whatever it is. You, like, I get calls, I had one again tonight. I just love it because you always get it. I'm in the central bus station and there's a lot of these yellow signs and it's signed by this Yoni Metzger guy. Can I eat that? So I explained the yellow is the Rabbi Nut regular, the tan is Rabbi Nut Mahadrin. The Yoni Metzger guy happens to be the Ashkenazi chief rabbi, and because there's no Rabbanim in Yerushalayim, he signs the two dough. Can you eat it? If you eat Rabbi Nut, eat it. If you don't, don't. What does that mean? I said, it means if you trust Rabbi Nut, then eat it. Just like people call it, and they eat on you. Can you eat Beit Yosef? I said, if you eat that, actually eat it. If you don't, don't. That's not for me to tell people what to do. So the same thing in the airport. If you eat Atzi, I suggest you don't. If you want to eat Beit Yosef, at least you have seen something to be relying upon.
Being that you're a student of Rabbi Milowitz, also he was the student of Rabbi Feinstein, I just wanted to ask you something.
I wouldn't put me in the same league, but that's okay.
But somebody told me a story that Rabbi Feinstein himself wouldn't drink whiskey at his house because he didn't have hashkafa. Or he went to somebody else's house, he would drink it even though it didn't have hashkafa.
He also gave that tale, if you look at the Igros Moshe about the, there's a tale from Rabbi Moshe about the wine and the cast and all of that stuff. I'm not getting into whiskey, it's very complicated. For those that drink it, those don't. You have to worry more, in a nutshell, the stuff that's trying to remember the terminology. The stuff in the sherry cask is more problematic. The longer it's aged, the better it is, the more you gotta worry. Put it that way. Because the longer it's aged, I understand they switch casks at some point, and eventually they land out in the cask that had wine in it. But Moshe, I believe, gave a head to that said that it's still bottle the taste, and others say Mafi Tom that they're putting it in there because they want the taste, it's not bottle. Everyone should do what they want. There were a lot of scotches today with the Hesha I've seen. My question is as follows, I've never gotten a satisfactory answer, and I'm chutzpahdik, I admit it, but when I see a 30-year-old scotch with Ashkacha on there now, my question is, who was there 30 years ago to watch this being put into the ballot? No one even had a Havamina to give Ashkacha on whiskey 10 years ago, forget about 30 years ago. So how do you give Ashkacha on 30 years scotch? That was my question. No one answered. If you look on my site, I connect to this KWL, Kosher Wines and Liquors, Rabbi Shmuel Selman. If you want to email me, I'll give you his information. He doesn't write English well, but he speaks good enough, speaks French and Hebrew well. He's the guy that Rabbi Nut relies upon. If you want another guy I can give you, who's originally from South America, he's the guy that Dati Lumi World holds by. He's really an expert par excellence. The guy is like Kritchfeld, something like that. So there are two guys that are accessible. You can call up and ask them and they'll tell you, you know, it's a problem. Look, I can tell you one very prominent Yerushalayim restaurant a few weeks ago. You know, the Mashgiach decided to go over to the bar and check what they were serving. He took them off and he started looking. One, the Makor is grapes, so he took out rid of that. It was a bourbon base, so that was Stam Yenom. The other one was Cholavi. It was a meat restaurant. So the bars seemed to be something that slipped under the radar. I can tell you as a rule, if you're going out to a hotel or a restaurant, assume that you have to know what you're drinking from a bar. Don't assume anyone has checked anything. For whatever reason, it slips under the radar. So if you drink scotch, fine. If you drink vodka, if it's not flavored, according to most, it's fine too. Everything else, you got to know what you're drinking. What's a derivative of what? What's mutalicha, what isn't?
Speaking about the airport, what about
LL? Oh, you guys are really digging. LL's had, well, Hashem, we can say the public stuff. LL's had enough scandals with kashrus that I don't have to be the bad guy. I mean, they've been caught with the staff bringing trefin, putting it into the ovens several times over the last few years. And they've kashered the ovens and they've brought in shrimp the next time, did it again. It's a very difficult situation. I can say my dealings with the Rav from LL have been uncomfortable on the best of days. Very unpleasant, difficult to get any kind of straight answers. I myself don't see anything in Elal that Elal does being above board or anything really to be overly happy about the conference. I have no idea. You can't get answers and there's nothing backing it. And the people who I know a lot more than me, they pretty much say what you read in the papers is true, you know, the scandal. So if you can tolerate it, you want to get your double wrap meal, go for that. If that doesn't work, order it. It's definitely better. Probably still better coming from Eretz Yisrael to wherever you're going than anyone else coming here, as far as Elal itself. But there's a problem when guys heat up trash stuff in ovens, and it's happened many times already. It's not once, not twice. I don't know. There's a lot of inyanim on the airplanes anyway.
Sorry about the special
crop meal. If the crop meals are wrapped properly, obviously, it's, you know, double. That's probably the strongest plastic in the world. You get it? Right? You can't bring anything sharp in a flame. You see all these people trying to get that meal open, please. You said, I mean, that's amazing how they wrap those things. That stuff is outstanding. But look, you remember any of you were here last year for our way, Tzvi Rogan's, I think he gave the first or second thing about Simanim closing and talking. So it was a very good point he made. It's halacha l'maaseh, it's not a chumrah. If you're traveling alone, you opened up your triple wrap meal, then you went to the shevet team, you came back. Not how to eat it anymore. That was left out there, you know. So tell the Jewish guy next to you, keep an eye on my meal. At least cover your bases, that's all. It's not a hard thing to do, but people, these are things people don't think of.
I just want to point out that if you're talking about the guard living in the house, this is also a problem. Stuff in your refrigerator could also be
common. We're getting to that. Also, next week is the best one with the wine. You have no idea what's coming. No, it's true. These are Pashat Alachas, they're not Kumbas. People don't know. It's a very big problem. People don't have non-Jews in home. And the worst thing is when they say, okay, you have a good day, I'll be back tonight at 7. You don't ever say that. You'll say, I'll be in and out. When you say, like, really, any hetty you might have, once you say, I won't be back till 7, you just threw it out the window. Now it's party time. Halachically, you really messed yourself up big time. As long as there's a mirsus, so the goy thinks you may come and go, you got a fighting chance. Once you told the person, I'm gone for the day, you pretty much wiped out a lot of things that could have worked in your favor. Okay, microwave cooking. The Shevet HaLevi. There are heterim, very few. I think there was Sfardi post, but I remember who. Dayan Mi'ut says a microwave, if you want to know where I'm on page 5, a microwave can be used for cooking. Overwhelmingly, don't agree. Shevet HaLevi's Rav Shmuel Vozner Shlita, Bnei Brak, he says absolutely not. But as far as reheating, if that wasn't understood, I didn't say it for Farish, I'll say it now. Reheating has nothing to do with Bishul Yisrael, Bishul Akim. Cooking is cooking, reheating is reheating. Once it's cooked, anyone can reheat it. Once again, assuming that it's a kosher environment and everything is adhered to. I will say, one young woman who comes to my class Sunday night, she's like having a hard time at work and asking me what to do. I sent it to a rabbi. I mean, I know the answer, but I'm not a rabbi. You know, you have places where, like, my children volunteered at Magen David Adom, and there's a microwave there, and they said, Alti Dag, it's kosher. You can't rely on these things. If you got a public domain, there's hundreds of people using it, most of which aren't religious. They're using it for meat, dairy, maybe kosher, maybe not. Wrapping it in a thin layer of saran wrap is not doing you a lot of good, especially some of these, like in a place like Mada, where a lot of volunteers and people using it. You look inside, like no one's cleaned that thing in weeks and months. It's like stuff splattered all over. So you got to really be careful. Microwaves, again, it's a big area I've seen. Where there's much more leniency in America than Eretz Yisrael for. And Eretz Yisrael, even whatever, Lamaisa, you should really have 2 microwaves. That's my opinion. Everyone does what they do. It's covering. Say the chachila, it's a problem to have 1 microwave for both. That's the truth. And yes, there are tayrim. So Misha Samechal's there, but in Eretz Yisrael, it's not an acceptable practice. Not in the Haredi world, anyway. Eggs, like I said, even though Chazanim drink raw egg, I don't know if you need that. In the old days, they used to do it. My older brother, they made him drink raw egg on the morning of his bar mitzvah, and after he finished cleaning up the vomit, we went to shul. I was lucky; he got it first. My bar mitzvah, I didn't have to. Supposedly, raw eggs help your voice. Didn't do much for him. So again, Bishul Akim goes according to the minhag ha'makom, not your own personal minhag. I mean, if you happen to be someone who really does like a food raw, you know what's analogous, perhaps, to Shemitah. When you have Kedusha Shemitah produce, one of the laws of Shemitah says you're only allowed to cook it in its normal way. And Shemitah is not the year you can start coming up with new recipes that you never do before. And even though you might like to cook a potato certain way, you can't. It's the same Bishul Yisrael, Havdil, it's different halachas, but If Rav Am Yisrael or in your country, the minute I'm welcome is that eggplant is cooked, even though somewhere in the Far East they may eat more eggplant that doesn't do anything, or even in America. I think it's a very appropriate place where you have to learn halacha. In the United States, I can't think of an example, but if there's things in the West Coast that they eat it raw, and that, or they eat it cooked, and it's as well as the opposite. Once you land and you're living here, you have to change to the minhag here, and the Bishul soil may or may not apply, depending on which side it goes to. And that's also Shulchan Aruch. Coffee and tea, which is very apropos for being on a plane. Most poskim don't have a problem with coffee, especially Rav Sternbuch writes, especially if you have an instant coffee. And if you're going to add, and he writes milk, and you make sure to write, he writes chol v'soil milk. But if you're going to have add milk or sugar to it, you're doing the completion work. So he said a cup of instant coffee on a plane, again, we always make the assumption it's a kosher environment, is not a problem, especially if you're adding sugar and or milk to it. You're completing it, you're making it with oil achila. You're bringing the self mass as you. Cafe shachor, Turkish coffee, is a much bigger problem. Because there it's really, like for Ashkenaz, we're not supposed to have cafe shachor on Shabbos, because we hold this bishul achrei kliyah, and the svarim don't, some say klisheni. The end of the day is, al pi kol hadeot, Turkish coffee is more problematic, and if that's something you need to ask about, you should ask a lot. Instant coffee, according to the major poskim, especially if you're adding milk and or sugar, is not a problem. We're going to make instant coffee for you also. Again, I'll add on Mordechai Yosef, Makitone, can't touch it. Jews warming it, since it was already cooked, or Moshe Sternbuch adds, I remember correctly, that if a Jew adds sugar, then it's certainly no problem, completion of dish done by Jew. And here's about the plane and back, fine. Another case in point gets you thinking, convection ovens are commonplace. The Jew turned on the oven, puts the tray inside, now a Jew, Shemem in the kitchen stamp, opens the door. Throw a convection oven, and there's that, and there's that. Okay, there you go. Follow that, anyone have a guess? No, you don't. Commercial ovens in hotel settings, the manufactured, just like refrigeration in commercial settings, when you open it up, it stops the fans. The first thing it does is stops the fans. Sometimes it actually turns off the unit to maintain the temperature. When you save electric, meaning why am I cooling the whole outside? Or when I open up an oven, it shuts it down immediately because it assumes you're opening it, you're done. So if you put an item into the oven to cook it, to roast it off, and it wasn't machal ben dosai, it's not a third done, Ahmed goes over and checks it. He says, that's okay. Closes it. He now turned on the oven. So according to most poskim, that would be Mishul Akum for Ashkenazim and Sephardim alike. And these are why you hope that the hotel or the restaurant has good mashgichim, because an innocent act of opening the oven for 15, 20 seconds and checking something, which is part of his job description, if he caught the thing in the early stages and you shut the oven off, now he's actually turning on the oven. He lit the gas, so to speak. And you rendered that stuff. I can tell you, we'll use Rimon, I like the example. Not that long ago, within the last few months, I know the Mashkiach, he davened with him Motzei Shabbos, and he flies out of there this time of year, because all the Americans want their food early. He's got to really, he doesn't even make Rimon, he doesn't even make Olenu. No, in the center of town. And he went there, he told me, this is a real Yushami guy, Hamisha guy. He must be in the 60s. He says to me, wow, I got there. I couldn't believe it. Food everywhere. They cooked and they worked. Couldn't believe it. I said, really? He goes, he said, I was shocked. I'm looking around who's here. And he said, all the goyim here. Not a Jew was there. They're not supposed to cook till he comes. So I said, what did you do? He said, Nechbegin Tugis. He said, he went, shut off all the gases, took all the food, dumped it in the garbage, one after the other. He went down to think, these guys were standing there astounded. This guy threw out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shekels of food. And he said, and then he lit the gas, he said, now you can start again. So the guy had a creaser, one like the maitre d' guy, he called up the boss. So he went to the boss on the phone, he spoke to him, explained. He said, no problem. He came in, the boss said to the mashgiach straight out, you want me to fire him or fire him all now? Because the boss knows his reputation is based on doing it the right way over there. He's not jeopardizing his business. That was it. Now they know until he comes, no one cooks a thing. But you have to hope you have a mashgiach who's a big enough Yerush Shemayim that's willing to take that much food and throw it out and know you're going to get away with it or not. But he's doing
not
the right
to mention
thing.
With their prices, they make that money back pretty quickly.
Well, you made it back in the first customer. That's not the problem. Well, Hashem, there are people that do their job by it. Alternatively, painful to say, I was walking over with my wife once to Yom Kippur from the hotel. So I wonder, now and then I try to show her that at least the Inyan Akashas, I'm not crazy. I don't say I'm not crazy in general, because there's a lot of other places. But so I showed her one or two places we passed, both with Mahadun Hashem. And I showed her, look at this. You see the shawarma, you see the guy lighting up the gas, you see that? She's looking, we stood there and watched. She said, wow, you're not kidding. You know, sometimes you think I'm out of my mind altogether. Here you are, Motzi Yom Kippur. We now all finished the Al-Khayt, we do the shofar, we're clean, get right in there, start for the next year. There's Ahmed lighting up the shawarma for people in the bar 2 hours later. And no one's doing anything about it. Or, alternatively, when I go to the kotel sometimes, the siren's already sounded, so in Yerushalayim it's early, but Yerushalayim is 40 minutes before Shkiyas Shabbos. Stores are still open, people are still in there, they're working, they're cleaning. Last year I saw stores, last day Pesach, you gotta understand, it's a lot of work, and once they're Pesach, they cook. They start a few hours before Yantav's over, they're in there cooking. It's an amazing thing. So when I say I don't trust certain hashes, it's not because I'm biased, because I don't like that, it's because when you see enough of it, at some point you have to draw conclusions that either everyone is catatonic, or they just don't care enough to do it properly. And that's the status of Yerushalayim, unfortunately. And again, there are some very good places. If you're capable of knowing which are which, then you're fine. If you don't, I would suggest use caution. Okay, I'm trying to get you to compel to think and learning of real life scenarios. Okay. Okay, here it's. Where did I get this in here? I don't know. Oh, yeah, I know why. I put in those 7-8 points. Because I basically got tired even cutting and pasting. I used to type it to the email responses. Then I found one, I put it aside, and then I even made one of those word things where you type a few words and spits it out. People call all the time, I want to go here to make the Mahadran. They're not making Mahadran, can I eat there? They said they have Abu and chicken, you know, can I eat there? So I try to put out some things to make you think, and if you look at those 8 items, which I'm not going to go over now, but this is food for thought. Next time, if you want to go to a place that kashas its Mahadran, I'm not saying you should or shouldn't go, but when you call up a mashkiach and you say, what's the hashkach? And they tell you, the chicken's Reuben, the chicken's land, whatever works for you. Is that outside? Wow. Bad neighbor. You need to be concerned with a lot more stuff. And especially, I just want to interject that if you're going away for Shabbos, there's enormous issues with Chilul Shabbos in hotels. You know, the Rabbi Nut, at least in Yerushalayim, to their credit, the hotels are great. The Mahadran Hotel is even greater. Rabbi Bornstein, who takes care of hotels in Yerushalayim, he cracks a serious whip. The caliber of the Mashpichim in Yerushalayim are very good. These are, I can picture a few of them, by and large, are very learned people. Because if you want to be a hotel Mashpichah, especially on Shabbos, you've got to really know some halacha. To be Machmeh is easy. You're not sure? Hustle it, goodbye. But when you come into a dining room Shabbos morning in the plaza, and like 400 people are waiting for the cholent, and you found things that are wrong with it, you better start knowing a lot of hetayim that you can pull out of your hat that work, or if you're going to apostle it, know you have lucky ground for doing it, because the hotel's going to have to be refunding a lot of money. And one of the famous stories is this Rabbi Altman, who's still there like 20 some odd years ago. He walked in and he stood up on the table, Shabbos, and announced that no one's even hot food for lunch. And then the guests had a canary, and no one had hot food for lunch, and he stood the Rav there 20 years later, because he knew what he was talking about. So you need to have a lot of Shulchan Aruch on your belt to know what you're doing.
Speaking of hotels in Yerushalayim, is it true that Yerushalayim does not give Mahadran Hashem for Pesach?
Correct.
So, as you like to point out, I believe it's somewhere in Dor Tidbits, but a lovely person advertising Yerushalayim
Mahadran
for Pesach.
Right. They don't give Mahadran because, by definition, Mahadran is supposed to accommodate Ashkenazim and Sfardim alike. And since there's Inyanim like Kitnios, and then there's the Gavroch, yeah, yes, no, the Rabbi Nun says, no Mahadran for Pesach, which is a very wise decision. Your community is even more strict, stricter, it's a better word. They close down everybody for Pesach. 80 stores have to close. So yes, you're right. So when you see, I looked at advertisements, I showed my class a few slides, I was going to bring it in. Truth is, I was too lazy to show up to project the computer. But when you look at the ads now, I see that the trend has changed over the years. The average ad today, Hebrew or English, even I took from Amr Vaseya, which is a Haredi paper, and from Yated, which is a Haredi paper, and I took from Torah Tidbits, and I took from other places. They write, they really, there's like someone made a lexicon of all the buzzwords. And that's all you need. They write, Akol Mahadrin, Lo Shuya, Lo Gebroch, Matzah Yad, under the Rabbanim Shlita. Who's Rabbanim Shlita? No, I'm serious. No one has, and I'm amazed that no one knows who the Rav Amashi is. No one knows who's given Ashkacha, but he sleeps us. Everyone eats. It's an amazing thing to me. And that's really what it's become, and no one seems bothered by it. You know, if that works for you, that's fine. But I'll give you an example. I think it's an outstanding example. because the place is legitimate, so there's nothing wrong with talking about it. You go to Kibbutz Levi, which for many years everyone told me Kibbutz Levi is all Zanuva Mahadrin, Landau, and Eda Chavedi. I said, okay, that's cool. So when I was thinking of going there once, I called up the Mashgiach and I said, you know, what's the deal? And first he said, why don't you look at the website? It's quite comprehensive. And then call me if you have any questions. I said, that's fine. So I looked at the website and it says Beferush in the Hebrew website. I didn't see it in English, as a matter of fact. That everything is Landau, Eda Chavedi, except for the chicken and the meat. Which is a legitimate claim. That means the spices are Eda Chavedi and Landau, the popcorn, the tomato syrup, the soy sauce, the chicken and meat are Mahadran. So he said, he told me straight out. And he said, okay. He said, if you want to have Rav Rubin, I can give you Rav Rubin, I can even give you Rav Rubin in separate pots. Which I thought was commendable. But like a few weeks ago I spoke to Mashgiach for someone who wanted to check it out, and then he looked at Rav Rubin and he saw I did have some idea what I was talking about, even though I have the heavy American accent. And he says, this is the Mashgiach, not me. Lamaisa, if he's really mocking Rav Rubin, he shouldn't come. I said, why? He says, because last week all the shechitas got mixed up, and they didn't know which is which, so they just took some and threw it in the pot and said, it's Rubin, they took the rest of them, and they don't have an idea. And they have someone out left for this week too, so this is not a good week for him to come, because they don't have a clue what they're serving. I said, you serious? He goes, yeah. I said, I don't want to have this on me. I'm telling you this, I'm telling your friend not to come.
This is a Lavi.
Yeah. So the Lavi basically is not Babanut, it's not Landau, it's not Rubin. It's whatever Babanut they use. That's what it is. And it says so on the website if you read the Hebrew. The English doesn't say it. The Hebrew website says everything is Badats of Landau and Eda Chavedi with the exception of the beef and poultry. And all the milk is Mahadra. All the dairy products, I mean, not just milk. So you gotta read carefully. You know, people see the word Landau and Rubin, that's it, I'm done. Landau and Rubin. When you get up there, you expect to see the two families, the Landaus and the Rubin, sitting for the days eating together. You gotta be careful. And he's, I believe when someone pays a lot of money for a legitimate heksher, they're usually quite anxious to announce it. Like you see, very rarely when you see an ad for a hotel or a restaurant, let's say, with a Rav Rubin or an Eda Chavedi or Rav Landau, where they'll just write the Heksha Badats. They'll write Badats Eda Chavedi. They'll write Badats Rav Landau. Because when you're spending the kind of money for the Mashvichim you need for these guys, it's to your benefit to say it. So I say, alternatively, when they're always writing Rabbanim Shlita and there's no name, that's worrisome. And you really should know. And then they'll say, so his name is Baruch Rosenberg. What did you expect the name's going to sound like? You know, Ahmed Ben Abu, it's going to be a Jewish name. So who is the guy? So now you got to call the rabbi to shul and say, who is the guy? I'm serious. You know, I have things with weddings. Well, here and there I get in a good mood. People ask me to check out. And we did one a few weeks ago. I was mamash on the phone for 4.5 hours, literally 4.5 hours. Dozens of phone calls trying to track down who was catering this wedding. Was the hashgach or was there no hashgach? And at the end, the Eda Chavedi wedding was a Rabbanut wedding with no hashgacha. That's what it ended up being. It was so convoluted that I was going back. I could not absorb what was going on. It was just so many people involved, and it was one passing food to the other. I couldn't even. The truth is, at the end, I wasn't even 100% sure. I thought the food originated in the Eda Chavedi kitchen, the Chachila, but I wouldn't even say that for sure anymore. It just went through so many hands. So it's the same with the hotels. If you're comfortable with it, and I don't say that in a derogatory way, that's fine, but don't be sucked in by good advertising. Don't be sucked in by people who have a good ad campaign manager. And you also will notice that the writing, the fonts get smaller and smaller and smaller. Look, I'm telling you, look at the ads. You'll see when it gets down to the kashrus part, and we have swimming, we have tennis, we have tafyon, we have shum around the clock, and the coffee team never stops. And the Rabbanim Shlita under Hashgacha of, and then you see this little squiggly and looks something like an Eda Chavedi, but it's not. And who is it? You take a magnifying glass, it just says like under the Rabbanim Shlita or something like that. Who is that? No one knows. Sometimes you'll see names. Who are they? Do you know who they are? So if you don't, why would you go there? Just because it says Rabbi? Remember something, if someone's faking you out, he's not going to write not a rabbi, he's going to write Rabbi. That's the idea. He wants you to make a reservation. So he's going to write whatever you need to see. So you have to check who the person is.
That's why I mentioned my ad, which as opposed to these which don't lie, seem it's actually lying.
Right. You know, and I can tell you the hotels in Yerushalayim, for example, the Ramada and the Plaza and all these others, and it doesn't matter if you eat at them or not. Some have better shkitas, some have what you like. That's, but they do it right. Meaning, they're all kosher for Pesach. I mean, Pesach's in full swing in these hotels. It takes months. They go wing by wing by room by room. Eventually, the week before, they usually bring in 50 to 70 or 80 guys one night, depending on the hotel, and they do the big turnover, and then they have the armed guard outside the hotel, usually about a week before Pesach. They don't check for guns, they check for chametz. I'm serious. No one's allowed to bring stuff in. Room service switches to paper goods, so you can't mess up the dishes there. They do as much as humanly possible to do it the right way. And then you go to some of these hotels, you know, someone goes to a place up north, and it's a nice atmosphere, and it's this, and can I eat there? So you can do whatever you want, I don't know. They have no hashgacha, I don't really want me to tell you. But she said it's this and that. I said, okay, so what are you asking me to tell you? Am I saying she's lying? No. You know what she's doing? I don't know. What do you want me to tell you? I can't tell you anything good or bad about it. You got to be realistic. He said, if you have a hashgacha that you know is a hashgacha, or if you have a rabbi X, a rabbi Y, a rabbi who you know, and he says, I'm giving a heksha there, then go for it. But it's a stamma name. It's not a name. It's a business opportunity for some people. You got to really look out to it.
Does the OU continue with
the Ramada over Pesach? Yeah, sure. Ramada actually is one of the hotels that kashes very few of its dishes. They have a whole separate set for Pesach already. Rabbi Sackett has like an underground machzan. It's like a whole basement, which is filled with Pesach Kalev. Over the years, because the manager guy, Harvey Duggan, the Shoma Shabbos fellow, he lives in Hanover. He walks most Shabbat hotel, he walks to the hotel. But he's the Yerush Shemayim, and him and the Mashkiach, the Rabbi Machi, get along very well. And over the years, they allocated handsome sums each year. Over the years, the equipment's equipment, but over the years, they allocated a lot of money for replacing pitchers, high chairs, trays, you know, on and on. And the Mahsan kept growing, growing, kept allocating more basement space. And you go down there, it's mamish, you know, humongous area, and they don't have to kasha things anymore. They just have mamish for Pesach. It's a wonderful setup. Like I said, you should line though. Abundant in hotels, people are really at the top of the line for the mashkichu. You know, but that, again, I'll interject. Even if a guy does a good job, depending what your level may or may not, like the Plaza, for example. The old man is Talmid Chacham, he's a Shochet. He travels for tuna fish, he travels for candy, he travels for this, he travels for that, he keeps the hotel running. He's as professional mashgiach as you get. I would trust anything he tells me. I wouldn't eat in a hotel today because they use kikas I don't eat. No, it's for me, I'm not saying for anyone else. So there's not a stira. You remember I said, all over the beginning, there could be a good heksha. A good heksha means everything I say I do. That's a good heksha. A good heksha does not necessarily have to be an acceptable heksha. And there's no stira, because you could say, this is great, you know, so I'll eat everything but the chicken because I don't eat this pita. Or this is great, I don't eat this cheese. Whatever it is, nothing wrong with that. Or you could say it's great and I'm eating everything, achito. But it doesn't, my eating something or my crazy chumras doesn't cast a dark light on any mashpia, chas v'shalom. Guy's doing his job, he's doing his job. The hotel in that case, when it changed, I don't know how long ago it is, but when it changed from the Jerusalem Plaza to the Leonardo Plaza, the new management decided that they don't want to spend the money for the Erech HaVeda and Landau stuff anymore, and they got rid of it and went for Rabbi Nun. So that was a policy decision. So it's the same thing, by the way, with Rimon. The Rimon used to be Aguda, and then more recently it was OU. Now you went to Rabbanut. So everything there's Rabbanut Shkita. So if you eat Rabbanut Shkita, Yimon on Lund Street is an outstanding Mashkiach, from Yerush Shemayim. Every piece of lettuce is washed and checked, every grain, everything is Bishri Yisrael, Lechat Chilah for everybody. You know, they do everything you're supposed to do. So now you have to decide are the products, what I eat, and if they do, that's a wonderful place. You just need the money to go there. So again, I think that's an important concept. A good Heksha, by my definition, is a Heksha that adheres to its own rulings. You know, when I find a Rabbanut, who makes the halacha for the Rabbanut is the chief rabbinate. When the chief rabbinate sets protocol for the nation to have a minimum standard in every city, so that means a Sephardi fellow who's makbid on his halacha is not makbid, he adheres to his halacha. Just like a Sephardi cannot put a piece of non-glot meat in his mouth, his mouth is trade. That means for a Sephardi person, even if he's kosher light, I don't want to use terms this kind of Jew, that kind of Jew, he cannot go to a non-Mahadran place because a non-Mahadran place is allowed to use non-glot. He's not allowed to eat that. That's trade for him. That's the Beis Yosef, not me.
Or the Bishalakum place.
So alternatively, when you go to a Mahadran place, right, or Bishalakum, alternative place, Mahadran should be Bishal and Yisrael, but in Yerushalayim it's not. So that's not a good thing when your heksha doesn't adhere to its own rule book. I didn't make that rule, the Rabbanut did. So if you're not doing it, so So either you should have less restaurants with the Mahadran Hefsha, or more Mashkichim to enforce it, or someone that knows what they're doing that can make the system work. But to say, to just get up and say, we tried our best, and Lose, and
Lose. You say that. What? What Mahadran is.
Exactly.
See?
Almost Mahadran. Wish that was Mahadran. You know, so I'm saying, so
for
like Beit Shemesh at least, Baruch Hashem, I use Beit Shemesh as an example, not because I'm here lecturing, but Swiss does what he's supposed to do. The lower regular, the regular hefsha is what it is, and it's a good hefsha. I don't think anyone here should eat it. The Mahadran hefsha is what that should be. If you eat the shvitas they use, it's a wonderful thing. They do what they're supposed to do. That's the best you can ask from somebody. The OU, by the way, I think in the United States, is also a good hefsha. If you ask a rabbi, you'll get an honest answer. No one would lie to you, chas v'shalom. There's a halachic basis for everything they do. Does that meet your level? Not necessarily. Yes, it does. That's your own decision. The point is, that's a good hefsha. They do what they say they do.
I mean, there is, I think, in a lot of cases, that the bigger it gets, sometimes the bigger the problem can get.
Okay, look, every hefsha, we're not naive. Any hashgach in the world has problems, Eid HaChavet included. You know, when I first came here, and I picked an insurance agent, he said to me, I hope you'll never know how good I am. I said, what do you mean? He says, guys, every insurance agent's great. You get a good price. Once a year, they send you a calendar. You pay me. You get to know each other. Here and there, you'll drink a cup of coffee. But that's the end of it. You only know how good the guy is, chas v'shalom, if someone gets really sick or you smash up your car and you have to make a claim. The same with hashgacha. Hashgacha is good as when something goes wrong, how they deal with it, how they address it. That's when you really have the litmus test of one over another. I'm going to wrap it up. We're not going to get through the book. Next week, you'll decide if you want to finish the book. If not, you'll read on your own. We'll go to wine next week. The book is written fairly well. I think it's self-explanatory. The blank sheets are because nothing was forgotten. It's because the printer only works in sets of four, I understand. I didn't write enough to get to the next set of four, so you have a little doodling space for the kids. Any questions? Yeah.
What's the question? When you said that the Stam Rabbanut in Beit Shemesh you wouldn't recommend,
right,
that you would eat, but yet the Mahadran Rabbanut, what's his name?
Rabbi Swissia is the head of the Kashrus department of Rabbanut Beit Shemesh.
Yeah. So you didn't necessarily comment on that. You say a lot that he does what he's supposed to do, but you can say for sure that the regular Rabbanut you wouldn't touch.
I don't eat regular Rabbanut in any city, not Sfad either. I think they're actually outstanding because regular Rabbanut, it's by definition, its standard is below my standard. So even if they do everything 100% according to the book, you don't meet my standard. You don't have to have glatt meat. You don't have to have Mahadran dairy. You could have milk from Kula Shabbos. If you use any heksha from any other rabbanut, it has to be accepted by rabbanut law. So there's, like, the raw ingredients for me is a non-starter. I'm not even saying they're doing anything incorrectly. So when you get to the Mahadran level already, so then you have to decide if they do it correctly. So you have Bishri Yisrael, you have Bishri Lachim. There's no linas lila, the food, the garlic, peeled garlic and unpeeled eggs, not allowed to stay out overnight. They're not allowed to have open wine in the kitchen. Excuse me, they cannot allow to have Shabbos stuff. They're not allowed to Shemitah has to be Shemitah l'chumis. They have all these extra things on top of it. So now you have to say, so let's say the store does everything you should do. So now what hashkachas do they use? If that's acceptable, eat there. If it's not. It doesn't have any kind of a contradiction. Let me make it easy. The Rabbanut Beit Shemesh, for all different reasons, it's not important why. Generally, we'll only give a hashkacha to a store on a Mahadran level if it has a Badatz as well. So if you look at any of the Mahadran, you're probably not seeing it because you're more seeing the Badatz extra, so you don't care what else is there. So you will see Rabbanut Mahadran with bells, you'll see Rabbanut Mahadran with Chavedit, you'll see Rabbanut Mahadran here with other Hashem as well, but that's Hashem. There's only one exception, he was very impressed that I found it. The Burgers Bar on Migdal HaMayim, is that what it's called? That's Rabbanut Mahadran without it, but that's next to it. It's the only one in the city. And I have to say, he does what he's supposed to do there as well.
I love that.
Just for different reasons, the way it worked out. I think it was more that the Badassim didn't want to go to that area than you know, it's a Sephardi fellow who owns it. But the Sephardim, it's hard to know. Shomer Shabbos not. He doesn't look Shomer Shabbos, but I caught him twice in the afternoon putting on his tefillin and davening, because that's Sephardi, you know, that kind of a kesher, you know. But at the end of the day, you had Mahadran and Hashem there, the Shkita, and it's only Bishri Yisrael, there's no goyim in the kitchen. They wash and check the stuff they have to wash and check. So they do what they're supposed to do. So the Rabbanut Beit Shemesh at least adheres to the rulings of the chief rabbi. So hence, to me, it's a good hefsha. If you eat it or not, that's your own decision. But that's not, I don't see, I think if people can conceptually grasp it, it's much less complicated. You know, oh, you could be a good hashem, but that's Beit Yosef. You know, when I answer people, they think I'm being facetious, but I'm not. They say, can I eat this? And if you eat Beit Yosef, you can eat there. What does that mean? I said, that means you need to find out a little about what you know, and do they comply with it? But that means you'll have to sit and listen to a few things, learn a few things to know even what to ask. You know, Beit Yosef to me is a good hashem. Would everyone eat there? No. And there's no problem with that. So you have to look, we've covered Mishnah, we've covered, I don't know, what else did we do? We did something the last few weeks. You know, you covered all these inyan halacha about different poultry speakers. We saw a difference between the Datsim and the Rabbanut. And we've spoken about short-term memory loss. Livers, kashrim. So you've seen there's differences between Ashkenazim and Sfarim. We've seen there's different levels of shkita of poultry, different kumas, if you want to call it. We've seen that there's different measures taken as far as Bishin Soil, Bishalapin. You put all of this together, you start having a different picture, and you have to say, well, this stuff's important to me now, and I'm not in Queens anymore, I'm not in California, and I want to live differently. So if that's the case, then you have to find out which hashkachas meet these criteria, which go. By and large, the Badatsim in general, and I say Badatsim, I know it's all-inclusive, it's a big thing, but they're on a higher level. Like, and I, when I say they, that I will clarify, I will say good Bishin Soil, of Landau, Chabad, Sheamus, Bells, Beis Yisrael, Rav Rubin. Not Beis Yisrael, Beit Yosef. I don't know about the rest. I don't include them. And I don't say anything bad, but I'm not saying something I don't know. I don't know about Yoledei, which is Ramach, but I don't know about Badatz, Chuchat Am Sof, and not Petach Tikva, not B'nei Brak, because no one's ever answered the call, no one's taken me around. So I don't know. So I'm not going to say anything bad. I'm not going to say anything good. I don't know. I'm embarrassed to say I don't know. What I do know, the ones I've seen, at least I can say with a measure of, I've seen X amount of places and this is what I found.
You know, the Rav Kaduri one.
That's a scam. That I can tell you based on the Baba Nui. That's a grandson or something.
Never, he died
was,
a few years ago, yeah.
Was never wiping out this tzaddik's name. Sorry to say.
Did you ever say a couple of weeks ago, I can't remember, when we were talking about poultry, about shkita, did you say that the OU is Rabbi Chadman?
I said it based on what Rabbi Malinu, Rabbi Stein, and the other Rabbanim, Rabbi Fink, Rabbi, they all say.
Just by shkita?
Well, we're talking about poultry. Alright, it's just by the criteria we set. They don't cut them open, they don't do somen agidim, they don't check the inside, they don't take out the kidneys, so all these things together. They operate on the other side of that spectrum. Anything else? Next week, Amir Hashem, the end of the show, we're talking about wine. I think you don't have to be Irish and a big drinker. It's worth coming because it has to do with having wine in your home, wine at the table, non-religious family members and guests, wine and cheese tasting, and a lot of other.